As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
I've never been this nervous in my life.
Greetings from Long Time No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I don't need headphones, do I?
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, checking out the episode. Please do hit the subscribe button, for I put out three new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to keep you up to date on your favorite artist and discover some new ones as well. Of course, the usual spots like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, I get to talk with one of my favorites, Joan Jett. New album, it's called Change Up. It's her very first all-acoustic album, and it finds classics and deep cuts really being stripped down to their roots. We're going to get into what prompted the project, as well as when she turned down MTV when they asked her to do the very first MTV Unplugged, and how songs like Cherry Bomb and Victim of Circumstance change with the new set, and with the recent 40th anniversaries last year of Bad Reputation and I Love Rock and Roll, that had an influence on her song choices as well. I also want to hear about 1987's Light of Day. That's the movie that she co-starred with Michael J. Fox in. 35th anniversary of that one. The title track is also in this collection, so we're going to get into that a little bit. Recording a tribute to the late Mia Zapata in the band Evil Stig, and wanting to do a second volume of these acoustic songs, as well as if she consider a new record of songs in this style. Joan's also going to preview the upcoming summer tour with Def Leppard, Motley Crue, and Poison, tell us how she got her trademark scream from T-Rex's Mark Bolan, and details her new guitar with Epiphone as well. All that and even more. We're talking about Change Up. It's Kyle Meredith with Joan Jett.
Hi, how you doing, Kyle?
It's great to see you again, and it's great to see you with a brand new release that we're going to be talking about called Change Up. This is fun. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, sort of unexpected in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, so this is billed as your first all-acoustic record. Now, the last time you and I sort of caught up a little bit was during the first lockdown, and you were really gracious enough to do an acoustic track for Morning Joe. That we were doing over there on MSNBC. And you started doing a lot of those, as did a lot of the artists. Is that what this record is born from, those lockdown sessions?
Well, the lockdown sessions, and I believe right before the COVID thing started, we had a documentary that came out called Bad Reputation. And during the, the previews for it, we went to the theater in Los Angeles, and we were going to do a little, you know, a few songs, and it just really didn't make sense to set up electric, although I probably would have preferred that just because I'm used to it. So we did a little acoustic thing and did Reputation. We did about four or five songs, and yeah, it came off really well, and just better and different than I expected. And I think it made me approach the songs a little bit differently. But I didn't really get a chance to delve into it there at the movie thing. So, but yeah, that started sort of the spark as to, it might be interesting to try some of these songs, you know, some of our songs in an acoustic way. And it really changes the relationship to it, to the lyrics, to everything.
How so in that? Because, I mean, obviously these are songs that, you know, some of these you've been playing for decades. Some of them are a little bit newer, but like, how much does that actually change how you approach it?
Well, I think because when I'm listening to it, when I listen back to the acoustic stuff, it's just it's a different person than, you know, the rock and roll stuff. With rock and roll, you know, maybe sometimes the voice is affected or I double it or it. And for me, the acoustic thing doesn't feel, it feels like it should be stripped down. Like some of those things you do in the studio when you're playing electric, don't necessarily translate to the acoustic thing. So I wanted to strip it back and be like, you know, if you're sitting in a living room, you're not necessarily going to have reverb or echoes or all sorts of stuff. You're just going to be very intimate pretty much with the sounds. And so, and also during this whole COVID lockdown stuff, I spent a lot of time sort of playing guitar or just with the songs, and it just sort of, you want to be intimate. I think it made us all realize, or at least some of us during the lockdowns, we understood the things that were more important to us. You know, we got lost in the rat race of the world and your career and everything, and you're going. And I think a lot of people realized they wanted to slow down, whatever that means to them. And be more intimate with the things they're involved in life. And so for me, a big part of that is music. And so to look at these songs differently, it forced me to play some riffs differently, not forced, but it allows you to, I guess. And so, yeah, I had a really good time doing it. I wish I'd spent more time examining some of the songs for an acoustic treatment, because I feel like sometimes I might have rushed it too much and there could have been more difference. But then that gives me a chance, an opportunity, if we ever do this live and like do a little acoustic tour or something, then I'll really get to explore those songs that maybe I didn't take far enough this time.
Yeah, I was actually kind of thinking how surprising it was that, like, you never did like an MTV Unplugged when that was the big thing, right?
No.
Was that ever even an option? Did you guys ever consider that back then?
I was the first one they asked, but I didn't want to do it. You know, it was just not what we did, and I wasn't comfortable like that, you know? And, you know, everybody, I think of when I hear Unplugged, I think of Nirvana. So, you know, and they sure did it well. So I should have thought twice, but you know, by that I was happy just sticking with the electric stuff. So,
well, it has been fun hearing what you've done with these that we've heard so far. But the really interesting thing, I mean, this, the digital version of this, what, 25 tracks, I believe, something like that, which gave you the opportunity to go just beyond those hits. I mean, the deeper cuts, I think, you know, as far as the fans go, really seeing those, I mean, seeing that track list is like, oh, really? This is what we're pulling out. What was the process of choosing the songs? I mean, what were you looking for, anything specifically?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, some of it was just things that we were doing live at the time, you know, that we had been doing off our last studio album. And we've been switching around songs, so we had a chance to put more songs in that fans might not have had a chance to hear live. And plus, you know, then you get a chance to sing the lyrics. You get a chance to, you know, show the songs off. And you know, so for me, it's a little bit about going back and showing off some of those songs that maybe were not paid attention to at all, you know, the first time, except for the fans.
Like, did any gems, like, did you get favorites out of this? Like, well, wow, this was really cool that we got to pull this one back out and look how it shines.
Well, yeah, there's one that kind of was a favorite of mine because it sort of changed. It's, you know, the melody changed and everything changed. And that's a song called Victim of Circumstance. that we do. And I just like the way the melody, it's the same lyrics and stuff, but it's just the melody took on a different context. And so the harmonies were different. It just is a different song. And, you know, we did Cherry Bomb, which to me sounds completely different, but it's so, I love it. I think it's really cool and sexy, but I think it always was supposed to be sexy, but it's moody and sort of got a different mood about it. It's almost, I don't want to say spooky because that's not it, but it's just got a, I can't think of the word. Just a difference, a sort of coolness about it, but it's got the same vibe. It's just a laid back expression of it. And it still has the menace, but in a different way. So I don't know. I mean, I was surprised by it and wasn't sure that it would even sound, that it would come off, you know, that we didn't know what songs would work or ones we'd have to go, you know, forget this. This won't work. Even though it's a hit, it's just not going to work. And Bad Reputation, which was one of the ones that we did at the first, when we did this movie thing, which we recorded that version. And then we recorded another version. So there's actually a couple of acoustic versions of Bad Reputation, and they're both different. So they both got their own vibe to it. But it's, you know, it's just an interesting thing that I discovered late in life to play these songs like this. So it's fun, you know, to still be able to discover something like that this late in the game for me.
Especially after you've had that relationship with a song like Cherry Bomb, especially for that long.
Find something new that, yeah, was a lot of fun, you know, and surprised me and makes me a fan all over again, you know.
Well, like I said, especially, you know, from us being fans, and as I was mentioning, seeing that track list, I mean, I pulled out You Can't Get Me, Coney Island Whitefish, you know, seeing those on there, like stuff that I wouldn't have expected. But also, like, there was, I was actually, when I started thinking, I was like, man, I really hope she, you know, also did some of the newer tracks. And I was happy to see Soulmates to Strangers, that, you know, that goes not that far back. And I don't know, was that part of your thinking too? Like, you know, the opportunity to not just represent, you know, some of that early stuff, but to, and Fresh Start is on here as well, which is still, yeah, one of my favorite songs of the past, you know, few years. Like, was that, did you want to do that? Make sure that, you know, part of your career was also here?
Absolutely. It wasn't just about, you know, going back. And it also started because, you know, this year's, or last year was, God, it goes so fast. 2021 was the 40th anniversary of Bad Reputation and I Love Rock and Roll, both those albums coming out that year. So, you know, sort of investigating, that's how some of this started, investigating the albums, looking at what we might want to look at. But it certainly didn't just stay with those first two albums. You know, we looked all through it and, you know, had to stop at some point because we could have probably done 20 more.
Yeah, I started thinking of a few of the ones that, you know, you didn't touch, and you know, we, some of the stuff from Fetish and what was I writing, like the Evil Stig stuff, like I started thinking a little bit like, oh, I wonder what that would have sounded like, you know, just that opportunity if you had gone further, like the heavier stuff in the acoustic. And
right, well, believe me, I thought about Fetish, we were going to do it, but you know, now we have to get to a volume two, so that'll be in volume two, you know. But yeah, that's what I mean, that there's more to get to. And, you know, with the Evil Stig, that would probably be great. But, you know, then I'd have to talk to the guys about it and see how they felt, you know, if they'd even want me to try that. But yeah, there was some great songs there too.
Just a side note, I'm here in Louisville, of course. Mia, you know, her final resting place is probably, I think, 2 miles from my house right here.
Wow.
Just a little, yeah, little side note there anyway. Powerful, yeah, musician.
We're speaking of Mia Zapata from the band The Gits, which tragically she was murdered in 1991, I believe it was. And her band, we did, you know, some things together to raise money for a private eye. And we called it Evil Stig, which was The Gits backwards. And so I just thought that was such a cool name. And we went out and did a little tour and, you know, raised some money to keep the investigator on it. And, you know, eventually 10 years later, they found the guy.
Yeah, like I said, what a powerful legacy that she left behind too. And then, you know, getting Home Alive started out of that, you know, it's just,
Totally.
One other track on here, and this kind of works a little bit with the anniversary, Light of Day, also a favorite of mine, that gets on here, which ties back, you know, to the movie that you did, which I think I read was like 35th anniversary, maybe this year or last year of that one, which again, that's one of those fun ones too. I hadn't looked at that movie in quite a long time, but I did go back and check out some spots of that.
Oh, really? What?
Yeah. What a fun time capsule it is. That's what it is. And I don't know. I had wondered one thing, especially like looking at your career trajectory at that time. I mean, you know, sort of just you had the hits that roll right into that. And then Michael J. Fox at the same time, who was just coming off his own massive success. I mean, was that sort of like one of those white heat moments as far as superstardom goes of having both of you guys on a set at that time?
What do you mean?
I just feel like, especially knowing like 80s, like paparazzi style, just the way stardom went, it just feels like, man, that must have been like a sort of, I mean, I feel like as a fan, as a superstar epicenter of the world at that moment.
Yeah, but you know, I'll tell you, rock and roll was absolutely not part of the paparazzi scene until social media and reality shows. And then all of a sudden, rock musicians became celebrities. Before that, they weren't. We were never papped, ever. I mean, you know, I never had to worry about that. Even with Michael, I don't remember paps being around at all. And, you know, he was at that serious, you know, pinnacle. And, you know, it was an amazing moment, but it wasn't like what you would imagine it to be, like, you know, the Twilight stuff.
How was the jam sessions at that time? Is Michael, is he a good guitar player?
Yeah, he's a very good guitar player. And we formed a real little band for the movie and went and played some gigs at the Corner Bar in Cleveland, I think it was, because we filmed a couple months, Euclid Tavern in Cleveland. So we were there for, I think, a couple months, and then in Chicago for 8 months doing that movie. And it was, you know, it was intense, very intense. It wasn't all laughs, you know what I mean? Because it was sort of a drama, cancer movie, which, you know, kind of a heavy vibe.
Yeah, well, I just going back, I mean, like, you were on it. Like, your scenes were great. Like I said, it was fun to watch that. I didn't know until I was doing the research for it. I didn't know back then, of course, that Trent Reznor was in a couple of the local band scenes too.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah, you know, before, I think probably soon after he started Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, like I said, a fun little time capsule that you guys put together with that one. So back to the present anyway. Sorry, I'm getting off.
That's okay. That's quite okay.
So a change up. You know, you, again, fresh start you with the documentary. We have that soundtrack. You're going into this one and talking about maybe a possibility of a volume two at some point. But do you consider now of, you know, it's been almost a decade since the last full studio album. Like, could you do an actually album of originals? Are you all thinking in that too, of like writing some in this style?
Yeah, well, I mean, we always are. I know. The band just sent me, the guitar player just sent me a song, so I know stuff is happening. Yeah, but that's not like a huge concern of mine right at the moment. You'd think you'd have a wealth of things to write about, and because of just the way of the world, but I don't know if I really know how to put that into, you know, songs that I want things to be realistic, but you want to be uplifting to a degree, and you know, there's just not so much to really be uplifting about. But I mean, I can't say yes and I can't say no. I'd like to do a new album of new songs and stuff like that, but we'll see.
Well, especially, you know, considering the possibilities of something again like change up, like this acoustic sound coming out of you, like that sounds really interesting, you know, just
Definitely.
Yeah. Some songs like that. But I know in the meantime, though, the summer tour is finally happening that got postponed. And what I mean, talk
twice.
About the lineup. Yeah, right. Def Leppard, Motley Crue, Poison. Is that right? Is that the lineup for this?
That's the lineup.
That's insane. That's amazing.
It's going to be insane, definitely. I'm sure, you know, I don't even know what to expect, but if my memory serves me, I'm sure, you know, everybody was pretty crazy back in the day. And I'm sure, who knows? Who knows what to expect? I don't, but it should be fun. And we had to postpone it twice because this was supposed to happen in 2020. And, you know, we still thought we might be doing it by, you know, March or April of that year. But then they finally said there's no way and canceled. And then again, last year, we thought maybe we could do it. But so this is the year, I suppose.
So this is going to be fun. It's fun looking at that lineup and just looking at all the company you keep musician wise. I mean, you know, scenes are a little bit less such a hard line these days than they were, but even looking back, like, you know, coming from the punk world, there was a time when the punk world probably wouldn't have mixed with Motley Crue and Poison, you know, and then knowing what you've done with Nirvana and, you know, just on and on. How important was that ever to, like, it doesn't seem like you were ever stuck in, like, you can only be in this one scene. You can only talk to this one type of artist.
Exactly. I never wanted to be like that. Even though for my own self and with my music, I didn't want to deviate. Like I said, even going playing acoustic was way, you know, way too far, mm-hmm. you know, from what I felt I was supposed to do at that time. So because I've always, you know, mixed with all sorts of people and, both career-wise and early in my career, we didn't always play with rock and roll bands. I mean, we played with R&B groups and all sorts of different things. So I don't like to be so like that in my personal life. You know, I know music should match up and there can be advantages to having some variety and just not being all, you know, one style of music. And I think that, like you said, these days, people are more open to that. I don't know. It's a good thing to have variety.
Pure rock and roll, it's like O negative blood. It fits with everything. Pure rock and roll.
Okay. From
that's
Kenny Laguna.
I think it's pure rock and roll.
Pure rock and roll.
Like Chuck Berry. Pure rock and roll.
Like O negative blood.
That's why you can play with
everybody.
Nirvana, and you can play with Motley Crue, because it's pure rock and roll, so you fit.
Yeah, I mean,
and it's all derived from the great masters who did the pure rock and roll. It's an art form that's being lost, but people like Kyle keep it alive, and thank you for that, Kyle.
But also, I mean, I think that within the umbrella of the word rock and roll, that I've played it, you know, I've done heavier rock and roll songs and I've done lighter rock and roll songs. And, you know, so it's really run the whole gamut, I think. And yeah, I don't want to be so stuck in one thing as far as with people, you know, you don't want to only be relating to one thing because then you can't learn anything too. You know, it's just redundancy.
Maybe we'll skip Ted Nugent.
You know, I do see what you say, you know, and it is true. I mean, you know, when we were all coming up, genre was so important. The t-shirt you wore was all of you, that was your identity, you know, that was up and that, but then, you know, eventually all of those songs just become part of your DNA, whether it's, you know, from a hair metal group or whether it's from St. Vincent, you know, it all just becomes just this one thing. And I completely agree with that and see where it's coming from. It actually kind of reminded me that you last year, you know, covering T-Rex, like that's one of the great examples of pure rock and roll. And that, by the way, that cover of Jeepster, fantastic.
Thank you so much. And one of my first, you know, crushes and my big influence on my guitar playing was T-Rex and Mark Bolan. So, you know, that comes from, you know, the very beginning of me as an artist. So that was fun to be able to do something like that, you know?
Hey there, it's Kyle Meredith from Kyle Meredith With. After you check out the latest episode of my show, be sure to check out some of our other great programs on the Consequence Podcast Network, including Standing BTS, a bi-weekly podcast covering all things BTS and ARMY, and The Opus, Consequence's original documentary podcast exploring legendary albums and their lasting legacies. So head to consequence.net to listen to these podcasts and many great others.
I also love that you dropped your, I'll say trademark, scream, screech, howl, whatever you call that, that's in there. Do you, was there a moment where you're like, oh, I've got something with this? Because that has become one of the great moments in your catalog too, when that gets to come out in a song.
Oh, really? I didn't know that, but I got that. I copied Mark Bolan. If you listen to him in Bang a Gong, yes, he does a scream after the breakdown there. It was a little guitar riff, and then he does a little ow. And I just always kind of copied that or tried to imitate it. And then when I started playing myself in the Runaways, it just popped out. And then it became part of my DNA, I guess my musical DNA. So
I love it.
I took that one from Mark.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I'll kind of wrap up here, because the one other thing I saw that was kind of exciting is you did team up with Epiphone for a guitar called the Olympic Special.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about this, because this goes back to your own personal rights.
It does. Because I've been an owner of Melody Makers. I've used my whole life Gibson Melody Makers. And then also I had an Epiphone. It was a Sunburst guitar. I still use it. I got it in the Runaways I got it in the very early Blackhearts to back up one of my other guitars, because, you know, you're always worried about getting something stolen or broken. So this was a backup guitar that then became my main guitar. And we thought it'd be a great idea. It's a very simple guitar, no crazy nuts and bolts, just volume, tone. I don't even know if it has a tone knob. It's just a volume and an on-off toggle switch. We decided to do it in white just to give people an option if they wanted to mess with it themselves. White is a great background. So you can beat it up. You can treat it like the goddess she is. You can write on it. We put some stickers in there. So if you want to start, you know, some stickers that are on my guitar. So if you want to kind of copy or mix and match, or, you know, it's just a fun way for people to get a starter guitar, or, you know, it works if you really know what you're doing too. It's just an easy, basic guitar that hopefully you don't have to, you know, mortgage your house for.
I loved it too. I mean, this is exactly the kind of guitar that I wish I would have had right at the beginning. You know, this is, you know, or heck, now I would still have fun with it. I mean, you do with that, the design, I think is great. It's kind of the idea you had for that. I do love that. So yeah.
Thank you. Stuff.
Yeah. So Joan, in the meantime, Change Up again, this is so exciting to kind of get this project out, you know, the way it's come about, the way these songs sounds. I love what you do every single time. I cannot wait to hear more.
Thank you. You get the baseball reference, I hope, being in Louisville, you know.
It's hard not to. Yeah. That's all around me over here. So.
Yeah. Good. Let's get the season started.
Coming soon. Joan, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
Well, my pleasure, Kyle. Anytime.
Now, last time I talked with Joan, it was back in 2018, and she was joined then too by Kenny Laguna. I'm going to include that one here as well. This is when we were discussing the documentary Bad Reputation, two of the new songs that have been on the soundtrack that have just come out, Fresh Starts and her cover of Androgynous, that also included Miley Cyrus and Laura Jane Grace. Joan also told me about the weight of fronting a reunited Nirvana during that Cal Jam that happened that year. She reflected on her 90s track Fetish and gave us an update at that point on what the future held. Let's do it. Part two of Kyle Meredith with Joan Jett.
Hey, Kyle.
And congratulations on not only the new documentary, but also that new song. I fell in love with Fresh Start right from the beginning. This is a hell of a track.
Well, thank you
very much.
That's good to hear.
Let's start there. Let's start with the music. Why not? I mean, Fresh Start, this is the first music I guess we've heard in, you know, since the last album, which has been about 5 years. How was this one written specifically for the film, or was this something that you all have been working on anyway?
I think it was something that we were starting to work on anyway, and
well, it was definitely then, finished for the film.
Right, and we finished it for the film.
It's got a classic sound. It's got a timeless sound. I don't know what's the process that goes into this one, if there's any good story behind that.
Well, I think part of it is that Joan wrote it with Doug Cangelosi, our guitar player, and they have a nice style, and it's like punky and poppy, and they happen to hit a good thought. You know, I keep thinking, when are they going to run out of titles? So many good titles, right? And they just keep coming.
We were just thinking about, you know, music, rock and roll, and what do you write about as you get older in this world, in this rock and roll world, because it's always been sort of a young person's thing, you know, it's just a different perspective, you know what I'm saying? You can't write about, you know, the clubs you're going to, because it's a different, you're in a different life now. So how do you write about that, you know, how do you do that? And it's just really writing about life, because it's no different than anything else. And I find it's very parallel to what a lot of people in life go through, sort of at some point a reevaluation of what you've done in life, making sure you're on a path that you want to be on. And, you know, if you aren't, hopefully you can change it. And if you are, just to kind of assess it, you know. And if you need a little kick in the ass, to kind of give yourself one. So that, to me, that's what the song is about. It might mean something a little bit different to Dougie, I don't know, or to each person, but for me, it's that sort of kick in the butt that we all need. And it might, you know, you don't have to be older to need it.
I'd recently, last week, had an interview with Jill Sobule. I don't know if you know her. She had felt challenged on her new record because she had overheard an A&R guy say something about no artist can write anything relevant after they're over 40 years old, which that's sort of what I heard a little bit on this one. You know, it's like, you know, you talk about it being a young person's game sometimes with rock and roll, but I don't get that with you. I mean, this sounds as, you know, as furious as anything else out there.
But you know, it's if you fall into those guidelines that other people set, then you get in trouble. I mean, really, all of rock, you're writing about life. You're writing about life in a certain stage, maybe when you're 18, but it's the same thing, you know, when you're 30, you're writing about that stage of life and what's happening. At least for me, I transfer a lot of what's going on into my songwriting. And, it, you know, so it doesn't really change to me. If it's, you're going through the same things, but different in different ways. And so to be able to translate that into understandable situations that other people can connect to in their lives and apply it to their lives as well is really the goal, you know, to make that connection. So they go, oh, she knows what I'm talking about. Exactly. You know, and it's that sort of thing that you're hoping to achieve.
I use this as a jumping point back to the documentary that just came out, Bad Reputation, because a lot of these times, you know, these moments, they tend to concentrate on an artist's early years, I guess because you have multiple nostalgia generations in there. And I sort of wondered, as I look at Fresh Start, like, what's the narrative for the last 10 to 15 years?
Well, I thought our doc really covered the end. I mean, there was a lot of runaways. And, you know, remember, Joan and I, we didn't control the film. The film was made by Carrie Ann Brinkman, who runs Blackheart, and Peter Afterman, a superstar musical supervisor who did the James Brown doc and worked on Crossfire Hurricane, Rolling Stones and stuff. So these guys determined what story needed to be told. And I know amongst them there was a lot of talk about how much to cover the Runaways, but the Runaways is groundbreaking and it sort of sets it up. So there is a lot on the Runaways. But then all the stuff that happened with Mia Zapata and the Riot Girl movement and our involvement with the grunge acts and then with Fugazi, that was all in the last 20 years, let's say. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing.
You know, depending on your perspective, that might not be important to some people, but to me, It's huge. But I'd say the last 10 years we did the Runaways movie with Kristen Stewart and Dakota Fanning that was covered, and then we've just been pretty much on the road after that. So,
yeah, but there was the Hall of Fame that was in the movie.
The Hall of Fame that was in the movie. Some Nirvana Hall of Fame, my Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So we really did touch on what's going on in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Very much so.
I guess that's the part we're celebrating. I think what I said came off as more of an accusation against the documentary, and when I didn't mean it. It's nice because that is when you put these out, it's usually what they look at, you know, to cover a complete
right,
career
right.
like that. I mean, it's outstanding everything
right.
that's happening and the stuff you said. But though I'll jump back sort of to not to the Runaways, but you know, to 1980 when you all kickstart this, you know, the Black Hearts side of things in earnest. I started thinking, you know, both of you to be an independent artist in 1980, to be an independent artist now is probably much easier given the resources. But I thought in 1980, you know, it's almost like to me that I could look back on and think you barely existed, you know, to the outside world, you know, as you're trying to do this.
That's totally true.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. And to a large extent, we felt that way within 2 years after I Love Rock and Roll. We were back to that vibe, you know.
Absolutely.
What gives you the indication that you're going to break through other than just, I don't know, you have to, you sheer will or whatever?
Well, that's part of it. Part of it is that we weren't ready to explore other life options, but there was no other music business option. And when we found out that the record was a top import, we had a little deal in Europe, and the records were coming out of Europe, and we would like the number one import in America. So we got the idea, hey, let's make our own import. And obviously, that's a fraction of the cost. And our original Joan Jett records, which became Bad Reputation, we printed right on the outside, it said import. It was printed on the jacket, and everybody bought it. Nobody said, "Well, wait a minute. Why would there be original artwork with import?"
The tricks we play to make it work.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that's what we had to do to try to get a foothold. I mean, you know, really, we wanted to get signed to a major. We wanted all those bells and whistles, but you know, we were really not wanted, as you can see from all those letters. But there was just something in us. We knew we were doing the right thing. And I certainly wasn't ready to give up. You know, I put too much into it without, you know, just really.
The live thing was going good. You know, I hope the doc covered that enough. Mm-hmm. But when we started touring, we married it to radio stations. And it was like a kind of radio that existed then. It doesn't exist now, really. It was pretty freeform everywhere. So all the big stations, if they were rock stations, the jocks had a lot of leeway, if not 100%. And, you know, they're coming off a playlist, but they kind of decide what they take, and they have some leeway to play new records. So we had a lot of support like that. And then the PDs started getting on board. And with that help, the shows started selling out like crazy. And it got to the point where we played South Long Island. 10 miles away, they had a shut highway. It was like Woodstock.
But you're still talking 1980 here.
Yeah, yeah.
81.
And so we had that inspiring us and realizing with something we were tapping into, and it could have just disappeared. But
if we had let it, you know, but we just grabbed every, you know, everything by the tail and hung on. And that's the reason we moved to New York, so we could play more. Because, you know, if you're in L.A., you know, once you play the circuit, you know, all the cities within the area, you're kind of done. You know, where else do you go? It's a struggling band with no money that has to live in a van, and you're really counting every penny.
You know, like what she's saying is then you have to travel 1,000 miles. And the key for us was to be able to go home after the gig so we didn't have to pay for hotels or anything like that or figure out how to sleep overnight. And
right.
And so you could go from New York to Albany, New York to
in six states you can hit and get home.
Allentown,
you know?
Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Boston, Hartford, New Haven. I mean, it's like amazing what you can do. And every one of those places had a club. The drinking age was 18, so the clubs were thriving.
And there it is.
It was just a good combination of, you know, working with the local radio and just doing the work and getting out there and building reputation as a good live act, and you know, just doing it every year. I mean, we've really been on the road. There's never been a year that I've not been on the road in my whole career. I've never taken a year off, never done anything like that.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead. Download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Let me bridge the present to the past here, too, because over the weekend, you were back there again fronting Nirvana, which I'll throw in little quotes right there, which you've got a long history with because, in a sense, this goes all the way back to, what, the late 70s when you produced The Germs, right?
Yeah, actually, I think it was 1980. No, you might be right, 79.
He's right, because you made I Love Rock and Roll in Europe in 79, and then you met me in 79.
Yes, it was 79.
His date was right. I think it's 78. And we knew Kurt. We knew Dave a little. You know, we kind of met. Joan was producing Bikini Kill. Bikini Kill's drummer, Toby, was Kurt Cobain's girlfriend when we met.
Before pre-courting.
And then, of course, you know, Grohl goes on to play on Any Weather a little bit later on. But I was thinking, like, you know, you've done a lot of collaborations. You've been with, you know, with a lot of other artists, but Nirvana seems like there's extra weight there. And I don't know if I'm projecting that or if that's true, but is that how it is?
Well, it's weighty on all levels, you know. It's weighty because it's of who they are and who they were and what they meant to people and what they mean to people and what Kurt means to people. It's very humbling and scary to be asked, but as a fan, there was no way I could say no, you know, there was just no way I could say no. And if I was getting the okay from the actual guys in Nirvana, I mean, you know, who am I to say I can't do this? So, you know, when they asked me for the Hall of Fame, you know, I just was petrified, but had to do it, and was strangely calm that night, though, and it went great. I felt great about it, and, you know, that was that. So this weekend, I just got a text out of the blue. The Foos are doing a concert out in California, the Cal Jam, which I think they run it, and it's their show, and it was a big festival, and I don't know. They just decided to do some Nirvana stuff. I guess the whole band was there because Chris's other band was playing the festival, and obviously Pat and Dave were there with the Foos, and I you know, obviously I don't know what their dialogue about it was, but I just got a call to see if I would want to do it again, and you know, I'm just so honored to be asked. That it's very, but it is strange and weighty, and I don't quite know what to think about it, and I feel like I do it, and then I look down and walk away, you know,
right?
Because it's just, you know, it's not anything you can own. It's you do it as a conduit, you know.
Two times now.
That makes sense.
Yeah, long shot question here, but if Dave ever wanted to take that on the road, would you? Is that something you would also do?
I can't even contemplate that, you know, because yeah. I can't even think that they would do that, or, you know, I just. If it comes up, I'll think about it then.
I don't imagine he's going to do that, but, you know, fans can dream.
And no, I wouldn't. I wouldn't either.
Right, right. A couple more here, too, because as I look through the soundtrack for Bad Reputation, two tracks I wanted to ask about. Androgynous, the cover there with Laura Jane and Miley, that what's the story? Is that newly released? Was that unreleased before this?
Yes, the blue was unreleased, right, Ken?
Yeah, that's first, yes. We did it in Miley's backyard.
Yeah, it was in Miley's backyard.
Wow.
But with real deal musicians and recording equipment.
And why that, I mean, was that just the song that you guys were talking about? Was there any reason why you landed on Androgyny or Androgynous?
Hey, either question is valid.
yeah, I'm trying to, at the time,
no,
I think.
No, what it was is Miley was horrified reading about some people who had been discriminated against and started Happy Hippie, which is an organization, a foundation that tries to help especially kids that are kicked out for being whatever.
LGBTQ runaways and people that are, you know, thrown out of homes. And
But especially transgender suicides was bothering Miley. And so she just was doing what she could. She had Ariana Grande. She had other people helping her. But she came to Joan, and then somewhere along the line, someone suggested Laura Jane. And topically, that androgynous, I guess, fits into the whole.
And it was a beautiful version as well, I think.
I loved it. It was a nice surprise on there. It really was. As I was listening in the background, like, wait a second. What am I hearing right now?
Yeah, and, you know, personally, I think it's really topical, you know, about what's going on in our society in general. I mean, look, I can speak only for myself, but I've always felt kind of androgynous, you know, straight up the middle. You know, I just, so it's fine for me.
No, it was a really awesome surprise. The other one I kind of wanted to, because Fetish, I hadn't heard that song in a long time, and I thought, what a different song that it sounds like. You know, it's not so far off from the things you've talked about, but I think that was, you know, late 90s or whatever that first came out. And it just seemed like, you know, for all the ways you had pushed the envelope before, that was you even pushing it a little bit further, you know, in whatever way.
Yeah.
How does that one sound to you these days? What do you remember?
Oh, I love it. I
And the guy that books us, who's in the movie too, Elliot Saltzman, he's been with us since 1980. He says, one day, that song is going to cost Joan a lot of money.
Give me a break. Are you kidding me? Every guy band...
that we do it.
Every guy band says fuck, and every rap act says fuck in their live shows all the time.
It's not exactly the word fuck that's the problem. The problem is you're talking
girls
about...
Girls aren't allowed to sing about sex.
Girls aren't supposed to like S&M.
See? See what I deal with? I mean, it's real, and it's still alive and potent. It sucks, and so that's why, yeah, I ram Fetish down people's throats any minute, any time I get. If I can do that live, I will.
No, it's fun. I mean, you rock
know,
and roll's
it's
sexy.
A family situation gig, you know?
Yeah, but the one thing we don't do, we don't go into Disney World and curse. And
No, not at all. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, well, so if it's a certain kind of gig, if it's a, you know, regular hard ticket gig or something, or a little festival.
So what comes next for you all? Because Fresh Start seems like exactly that. You know, the movie is behind, you know, the life story is told. This feels like it could be the clean slate going forward. What happens next?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, we're going to be touring as well, all I know. And we'll be working on some new music. But really, I don't know. I guess the world is our oyster. We'll see what happens.
did you mention we're going to Australia in January?
Well, I just said touring, yeah.
We had a sold out. It was sold out there, which is great news. We've been having a response, I guess, that goes through the new medium. Because in Spain, we didn't work the market. We didn't have a record company there. No releases for the last 20, 25 years.
And France.
And when we went to those places, we had huge crowds. So,
actually, let's explain that a minute. We were on the road this summer. We were on a tour with Sticks and Tesla. So it was, you know, a booked tour. But last year, before we had signed on for this tour, they had booked a couple of festivals in Europe that were right in the middle of this tour. So in the middle of this tour, we had to fly to France and Spain and do these festivals, having no idea, not having been there forever, what kind of response we'd get, what they'd think. First of all, of an American band with a political climate. We had no idea if any of that was going to factor in. Then the fact that we just hadn't released a record there or had any sort of profile at all, it seemed like, for years. And I'll tell you, man, the second I walked on the Air France plane, everybody started going nuts. And I'm talking about, like, young college-age girls taking pictures and whipping their phones out and the flight attendants going crazy. And when we got there, I'll tell you, all these people were singing the words to our songs, all our songs, like off our last album tracks. It was amazing, and I don't really understand it. It was a tremendous response in both countries.
with both places and the fans knowing the words. And it was a very diverse crowd. It wasn't, you know, just a bunch of old rock and rollers. There's a lot of young kids, a lot of college-age kids, men and women. I mean, it was really eye-opening and hard to sort of figure out exactly what's going on. But in the end, I guess we don't really need to figure it out in one sense. You know what I mean? It's you just go with it. And so, you know, I don't know what's next. We're just going to go with the flow and hopefully good things come our way.
You're the essence of rock and roll, and I think that's what it comes down to a lot of. I mean, just in the past, you know, 5 minutes, we've talked about you're playing with Styx and Tesla, Against Me, Bikini Kill, and Miley Cyrus, and I think that says everything about what you bring to music, you know, all around.
Right. So negative.
Yeah, but you know what? The thing is you can't be fearful. To you know, I mean, we're all in a business, and years ago, when I was a kid growing up, you know, the stations played a variety of music. I listened to All Right Now by The Free, into Stevie Wonder, into the Jackson 5, into Bang a Gong. You know, it was a very diverse top 40 scene, and, you know, I think, you know, I don't want to lose that just because I'm older. I don't want to fall into these rigid sort of, oh, well, these guys, you know, I like, and these guys I don't. No, I mean, it's all music, and we're all entertaining, and it's all good.
Right, but I also feel you're pure rock and roll, which is like O negative blood, because it's just rock and roll.
Yeah.
And it fits into everything.
Well, I can say for what it's worth, side note here, we do play, obviously, your music and Against Me and Miley, and I even played the new Styx record because it was fantastic, so it's never been a problem for us to jump around.
Yeah, see, you know, it's so funny. We get all locked in these, you know, what we're supposed to do and what we're not supposed to do.
I'll tell you one thing. They are the nicest people. Those people they're nice people.
Yeah.
Just like Grohl is another special one. I like the people that they're not full of themselves. And there's so many there are, you know.
Yes. Yes, it's really a breath of fresh air when you.
Yeah, so the Styx guys were just great to be around, great guys. And Tesla guys are too. But Grohl's like the biggest guy, and he's down to earth. Just like him and John together, it's unbelievable. The most two down to earth rock stars on the planet.
Yeah, I mean, this guy, he's like the biggest guy on earth, one of the biggest guys, and he's just so never any kind of attitude with anyone who comes up to him. It's just, it's a thing to aspire to. Be because when people give you that much psychic energy, you know, it can be difficult to process it all. You know, when you got people coming at you at all angles, some people are nice and some people are a little bit more extreme. But to handle it all with such grace is really a gift, and it's important because, you know, everybody obviously expresses themselves differently. I don't think anyone is necessarily meaning to come off in a way that makes
Miley's another down-to-earth person.
Yes, totally.
And she has such empathy for people, which is terrific.
Well, it just goes to show that you can still carry along the mythology that, you know, of rock and roll and be a human at the same time, and I think that's really important.
Totally.
Joan, Kenny, thank you both so much for doing this. Congratulations again on this Bad Reputation film and the new song. I can't wait for whatever comes next after this.
Right. Well, we'll see you down there, or maybe up here, wherever you come. But thank you so much for supporting the record.
Yeah.
Appreciate
yes,
it.
Yes, definitely. Hopefully, you know, we'll get down to Louisville soon.
Yeah, we'll be glad to have you all. All right, thank you so much, and have a great day. Take care.
So long. Bye-bye.
All right, keep rocking.
And again, my thanks to Joan Jett and Kenny Laguna, as usual, as well. The new album is called Change Up. A big thanks to them and a big thanks to you for checking out the episode. Please do hit the subscribe button before you get out. iTunes, Apple Podcast, Spotify, Acast, Podchaser, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With for a new interview every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. After that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots. That's mostly on Twitter, also Facebook and Instagram, though. All three of them at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
They were just this hard plastic that didn't stay in your ears. So I never knew why people use them.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.